Welcome to Into Africa. My name is Mvemba Pezo Dizolele. I'm a senior fellow and the director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is a podcast where we talk everything Africa, politics, economics, security, and culture. Welcome. History at last for Senegal. On April 2nd, 2024, Senegal made history as the country inaugurated its youngest ever president into office, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, having been released from jail just 10 days before the election, making his victory even more remarkable and glorious. This pivotal event heralded a new era, with the 44-year-old Faye being the youngest democratically elected president in Africa. Faye was not his political party's, the African patriot of Senegal for works, ethics, and fraternity, PASTEF in short, first choice. Instead, his party had chosen Ousmane Sonko, who was barred from competing in the elections after a defamation conviction was found against him. After it was clear that he could not run for elections, Ousmane Sonko, being Faye's mentor, endorsed his mentee as his designee, which bolstered Faye's standing. And recently, Faye, of course, appointed him prime minister. Prior to this moment, the future of Senegal's democracy was clouded with a fog of uncertainty. The former president, Macky Sall, who had been in office for 12 years, had postponed the election scheduled for February 25th to a much later date in December. There were speculations that he did so to secure the presidency for his party. This delay sparked protests that quickly escalated into violence, resulting in the loss of civilian lives and the arrest of many, including opposition candidates. Yet this did not deter the Senegalese people, which has a strong body of opposition leaders, youth and civil society organizations, from protesting the unconstitutional decision, demonstrating a commitment to democracy in the only West African country that has never experienced a coup d'etat. The recently conducted election on March 24th has further solidified democracy in Senegal, with the election being free, fair, and the peaceful transition of power. Joining me to discuss the event in Senegal and the ramifications is Hawa Ba, Associate Director of Core Partners at Open Society Foundations in Dakar. Hawa Ba, welcome to Into Africa.
Thank you, Mirema. It's my pleasure to join you in this show.
Senegal is an important country in West Africa, particularly in the Sahel. It's an important country for ECOWAS, where it played a key role right next to Nigeria. The recent events were followed very closely by all of us, by the world indeed. What has this outcome, the election of President Bassirou Diomaye Faye, meant for Senegal?
I think the recent event and the outcome of the March 24 election, a way of revalidating Senegalese belief in elections and in democratic processes to choose a leader. Senegalese people are known for really sacralizing vote, the act of vote, and for deeply believing in elections, in free and fair elections, as the only way to select a leader for their country. You might have noticed that the only fight that they had is just for elections to happen, nothing else. Even though there was pundits that were raising the prospects of a military coup, and even some proposing that it could be a way of removing the deadlock. It has never, never, ever prospered among Senegalese because they believe that democratic principles, democratic institutions, democratic processes can be upheld, should be upheld, and the only fight that we're worth for is for these democratic principles, these democratic processes to be upheld and election to be held on due date in the framework of the respect of the constitutional provisions.
At the same time, while Senegal has had a long history, a remarkable history of democratic transition, peaceful and so on, and the military not staging coups, this is not the first time that Senegal is going through a turbulent lead up to the elections. We remember that in 2012, then President Abdoulaye Wade had tried to change the constitution and also stay longer. Then there was tremendous pressure from inside, domestic mobilization, but also from the international community. Eventually, he did step down and Senegal moved on. But then 12 years later, we're going through the same process with the president who at the time had the popular support. Why do you think Macky Sall did not learn the lessons from the last time that Abdoulaye Wade tried to pull the same?
Unfortunately, most of our leaders never learn lessons from the past and past processes. Senegalese democratic processes were tested once again. Just as you rightly said, we experienced a repeat of the 2012 events, and this time it was even worse because Senegalese paid a heavier price in terms of loss of lives. More than 60 people were killed. People were arbitrarily arrested, detained for months without trial, some simply for Facebook posts, others because they exercise their constitutional right, or they try to exercise their constitutional right to protest and of dissent or even of political affiliation. What that shows is that our institutions need to be strengthened, our democratic institutions, because they show cracks that allow presidents, sitting presidents, to try to violate constitutional provisions. If we had like a constitutional provision clearly written in terms of term limits, but also if like our judiciary and the separation of power between the executive, the parliament and the legislative are clear with balanced powers between the three arms of the state, it wouldn't have been the same. It means that we need to strengthen our judiciary. It means that one of, I think, the main problem also that led to this situation is that the president is too powerful. He has too much power, too much. We need to rebalance. We need to reduce the power of the president. We need to strengthen the parliament and the judiciary so that each arm can play fully its role and checks and balances are upheld. It means also that I think, and this is my last point on this, the citizens should play a more forceful role in terms of checks and balances and in terms of holding sitting president accountable. Civil society should play a greater role so that the citizen control at every level, at each moment of term of the sitting president should allow and should make sure that a sitting president cannot just decide things and do them and get the country to the level it arrived, you know, in February and in March.
You said there are a lot of weaknesses within the system with the president having too much power. Still, there have been groups or other checks and balances this time that seem to have worked. How did that happen? Because we saw the images on TV of the police or the military literally going into the hemicycle of the parliament and harassing MPs and so on. But it seems like there were other branches of the state that corrected that problem. So how did that happen?
I think because there was a very, very, very strong citizen pressure and mobilization. At some point, the judiciary and mainly the constitutional council had to play its role. And this time around, also on that, there are some key actors in the society who stood up, like academics that stood up and that played a key intellectual role. I'm saying that because I personally believe that if the Constitutional Council had the guts and the power to challenge the president, it's also partly because it was challenged by its peers, like the Constitutional Council members were openly challenged by their peers in the academia and in the judiciary, or like retired members who laid out very, very strong, irrefutable legal arguments leading to their ruling. Academics from Senegal, the diasporas, and even friends of, or just friends of Senegal from other countries, from the African continent and the diasporas and beyond, stood by and with their peer in the Senegalese society, you know, for weeks to write pieces, to lay out legal arguments, showing to the Constitutional Council there is no way that, you know, the forfeiture that was to happen because there was no basis. There was no legal basis, there were no intellectual basis, and there were no moral basis for that. That coupled to the pressure from the street and from diplomatic missions and elsewhere, I think helped move the needle.
The intellectual, the academics, and so on mobilize in that sense. But how do the people of Senegal themselves, you said there were a lot of pressure. You know, success never comes from outside and it doesn't come from academics. It comes from the people. How do the people of Senegal thwart these unconstitutional ambitions of the former president?
I totally agree with you. It's that the people's power that was determinant. And if the intellectuals and the others and the academics stood up, it's because the pressure from the street was not only strong on President Macky Sall and the Constitutional Council, but it was also strong and put on the elites, you know, on the academics, so, and asking them that they play their role in the sphere they operate in. Citizens, as I said earlier, paid a heavy price. They resisted arrests, they resisted killings, and many, especially the youth, you know, was just ready. I saw like many examples of young people leaving, going out to the protest and telling to their parents or to their friends, if I don't come back, just consider that I have died for the cause, you know, and I'm ready for that. And that's, you know, it's fine. So I think that strong mobilization from the street, bearing in mind that at some point, people couldn't even protest because they wouldn't be allowed to gather in the street to have demonstrations. But still, they went out where they could. They used the means that they have at their level for dissent, and we can even say for vandal at some point, because they had to use the means that they had to make their voices be heard, to make their voices heard. Dignitaries from both the judiciary and the outgoing regime were afraid for their families because they know how, you know, the threat that they were facing. I have seen people like writing down names, making lists of judges, of dignitary, of, you know, people being an influential position that might be complicit and, you know, of what is going to happen. And I think it was good at some point also to just touch on some of the social cultural consideration, because nobody wants the name of your family to be cited as somebody who has at some point betrayed the nation. You know, they have used many, many, many tactics, and it was just amazing to see even those tactics being deployed.
In terms of the mobilization of the population itself, Were there specific segments of the population that played a major role in driving the mobilization? So in 2012, Yanamar was an important part of this. It was not the only group, but they represented the youth, and there was a lot of youth mobilization. Of course, we have women, we have workers, and so on. How is this different from 2012?
We experienced the same level of mobilization in terms of, especially with regard to the youth. This time around, you wouldn't have like a distinctive youth movement that was driving like the youth component, and that you could say, and that you can say, oh, this organization was leading, was at the front. But you had like, for me, it was more diffuse, like you have different forces coming from different point of view, from different spaces, and rallying for the same cause without having, and that cause at some point, that was a problem. Because we didn't have rallying figures, except from the political front. When you know that you have PASTEF, and it's a membership, that were very clear on where they were positioned in this space. But apart from that, there were no rallying figures, both from like individual organization. That was a distinctive one from 2012. And that caused, I think, at some point, some kind of hesitations on even triggered some fear, because there was some lack of leadership in the civic front. As much as civil society organization was very, you know, had very strong stance, but they didn't have the power to come out and mobilize the people to go to the street, except for the latest weeks leading to the elections, where they changed their strategies, they tried to join forces and work in conjunction with the political forces, because the civil society itself, but only by itself, wasn't able to mobilize and to bring people out in the street. While especially the PASTEF and other forces from the radical opposition had only forces that were able to mobilize their membership and bring them into the street. So the clever thing that happened towards like the weeks leading to the elections is for these forces to join and to have like very strategic move, especially facing a repressive state, which is different from 2012. What was a Democrat in 2020, and people were able to protest, to be in the street? There was no closed, Senegal wasn't then the closed society that it is now, you know. Civic liberties were respected, people could go out, state protests, state demonstrations, which wasn't allowed in 2024, because repression this time around was very, very, very violent. And even there was no single demand of or demonstration or protest that was approved by the authorities. So which made it even more difficult to mobilize people in the street, to call for mobilization for people in the street, because just you were facing a violent and repressive state that was violating civic liberties and people's right to demonstrate.
President Macky Sall was able to co-opt law enforcement institutions to his side. Were there, over the years, it was 12 years, so I presume during 12 years he was able to capitalize and consolidate his own power. Were there pushback during that time? Or it waited until the time he delayed the election for the society to start galvanizing, albeit in a very fragmented way, you said, and then later coming together. But were they pushed back during the 12 years as he was mobilizing the institution to his favor?
I think they were pushed back during the 12 years, especially as the repressive state was mounting, especially also during the last 3 years, when it was clear that the president has an agenda and he had over the years created the conditions, you know, for creating an environment where citizens' abilities to move were limited. But I think many Senegalese were taken aback because they didn't see it coming. Like, they have seen houses, law enforcement forces have become more violent. They have witnessed the militarization of the space, the public space. We Senegalese didn't want to use to see gendarmes, police cars at every corner of the street. But that was built up. You know, there was a period that led to 2023, well, from 2021 to 2024, but we didn't see it coming. And I think when I was saying, talking about lack of vigilance from civil society mostly, is that President Macky Sall had over the years built the conditions for repressing dissent, for weakening institutions, for turning our security forces, our law enforcement forces that were considered as being really exemplary in the continent because of their professionalism, but turning them into repressive forces against citizens. The fact that we Senegalese, especially, you know, the civic actors and those in the civil society, didn't see it coming until they had to face it up front was, I think, a weakness in the process, in the period leading to the elections.
In the end, it worked out in favor of the populations. You came together as a civil society, student union, youth groups, and so on. What impact do you anticipate this democratic development in Senegal will have on other countries in West Africa? You know, countries like Côte d'Ivoire, people are now watching what's going to happen with Côte d'Ivoire, because there we have a president who has also, who took the road of election to come to power, but has since changed the constitution. And now people are wondering if he will seek to stay longer. He's also been very vocal, just like Macky Sall was, against coups in the Sahel and in West African spaces.
Unfortunately, you know, again, I will insist on that if we had strong checks and balances in institutions. With regard to the other countries in the SEP region, every context is different, every country is different, and I think also populations are different. I know Senegalese are, you know, Senegalese people, they are very allergic to injustices and are very jealous of the constitution, the constitutional provisions, and it might take some time, it might yield unintended consequences, but at some point they will rally and say no, and when it's no, it's no. The good thing is that we have not been alone in this, in the sense that because Senegal is pretty much regarded as like, you know, really a gatekeeper, a keeper of the standard in the region and beyond, I have seen many as a citizen from many other countries watching Senegal, because Senegal, whatever happens in Senegal will be crucial to the development in other countries. Now I think Malians are saying that, you see, and Guineans, you see, you don't need to go through a constitutional coup to have even a young president. You don't need to go through a constitutional coup to have alternation, because it's an alternative. Not only alternation of power, but an alternative, which is like the narrative that the military in Niger, in Mali, in Guinea are saying that we need alternatives. So it means that I'm sure it will have an influence on what the developments in Côte d'Ivoire. I hope so. And I hope that it will inspire the youth to have faith in their power, especially I'm singling out here the youth, because our countries are majoritarily young. Their power, even though we know that how repressive state function. I wouldn't, you know, rule out what is happening now in Togo and those who are opposing the opposition towards the constitutional coup that is being undertaken by the president is not inspired by what is happening in Senegal. Said, okay, you know, we can say no, we can face and we can win if we are resilient and if we use our power, our mobilization power, if we use our all the other forces and all the other resources we have in the society and beyond, we can face the monster. So I'm hoping the same thing will happen in Côte d'Ivoire. I have seen also in Cameroon, even though I have less faith and less hope for there, you know, they have formed, somebody has formed a party called PASTEF, PASTEF. but I hope it will inspire the others. Remember, in 2012, the Yanamar movement has inspired the Bali citoyens in Burkina Faso, has inspired as a movement and has even led to creating continental social movements and that learn from one another, that inspire one another. I'm hoping and expecting the same. I don't think we will go back in terms of, democratic regression will continue. I'm hoping rather, you know, this democratic opening and hope in Senegal will help address some of this democratic regression that we saw elsewhere.
I hope so. Like I said earlier, the Senegalese democracy has been tested twice and it's been pretty shaky. So I'm glad that you came back from the kind of the precipice there, and we hope this is going to improve in the next cycle and that we don't have to see this again. But the world is, a lot of dynamics playing there. What do the Senegalese people expect of President Bassirou Diomaye Faye? Is he equipped to meet those expectations?
I think the first expectation is to strengthen of institution of democracy so we never again face this. What we have been talking about in the beginning of this conversation. So we for now and forever never again have to come through this. I think the good thing is that the issue of term limit is now solved for good. But the other things is that we need to, and they have promised that, and they will be held accountable of that, is the independence of the judiciary and the separation of powers. We are in a very bad shape in terms of separation of powers, in terms of rebalancing the power between the three arms, as I said earlier. And this is something that is expected. Strengthening and deepening of democracy. I think it's really time for Senegal to move from procedural democracy to building and fostering a democratic society, which is not only around elections, around, you know, but go beyond. But democracy means much more than just elections. And I'm hoping that the presidency of Bassirou Diomaye Faye will start this new era. And for that to happen, I think civic forces also need to, it's not up to only him and his government to do it, but it's up to us, civil society and others, to remain mobilized and to contribute to the building of the democratic society. Of course, you know what it is about our economic situations in our countries, the joblessness, the youth tragedy that the youth is facing in terms of lack of jobs, lack of needed skills. So he will be very much expected to deliver on that. You have seen how the youth mobilize. Whenever I was looking at these young people who was in this, who were in the street, even any time, who were running after, during the rallies, the campaign rallies, after, you know, the convoy of Sonko and of Faye, saying, okay, these are their militants, they love them or not, you know, they admirers, but it's because also they don't have jobs, because that's why they're in the street at any given time of the day. And it was very sad for me to see the job, you know, we have seen the tragedy with the young people trying to go to Europe, trying to go to the US. We have seen the tragedies and it's still ongoing. And you need to create conditions. Of course, a government, a prison cannot create jobs. You cannot create, there's no way they can create jobs for the million. But they have to create the right conditions. They have to make sure that the enormous resources that we have as managed in the way that they profit to all segments of the societies and they fight inequalities. They can start with giving good examples in terms of reducing gaps between the elites, especially the political elites and the masses, preaching by you know, by the example, by showing integrity in the management of public resources, but also I think something that they are expected to do is to help create a society that where impunity is no longer the case. We have seen many. I think impunity is something that needs to be fought, and that they are expected to act on it.
President Faye surrounded himself with strong personalities, including his mentor, Ousmane Sonko, who's now the prime minister. How do you see the relationship between President Faye and the prime minister evolving?
That is a big equation. The relationship between President Faye and the prime minister Sonko is something that we will be following up and see how it's going to unfold. The only thing that at least we are assured is that they have decided to work in tandem, which is very logical. And having appointed that strong team of ministers, everybody agrees that they are on paper, they have the skills and the competency that need, but it's never sufficient. And we believe that the fact that you have somebody like Sonko, which is a strong personality, has strong character, which is a very strong personality, can help put in sync that team of very skilled, highly skilled individuals of minister of cabinet members. The one fear, one big fear that is ongoing is power corrupts. And there are many people who are afraid that the relationship between Sonko and Faye could be affected by power. But we are hoping that the complicity they showed, the fact that they seem to complement one another, I think if you observe them, they seem to be very complementary. And that complementary will play out well, and not in terms of competition, but in terms of being complementary, having two different types of characters that will do different types of ways of managing that will help in terms of delivering on citizens' needs.
Time will tell, of course.
Yes.
Once somebody is the president, he's the boss. And the relationship
exactly.
is inverted now. Who's the mentee? Who's the mentor? It will be. We are all eager to see how that will play out. The new guard hour is also vowed to reconfigure the relationship between France and Senegal. What should we expect of that?
I think this is one of the biggest tests. And also, I didn't say it, but it's a high expectation in that front. Reinventing and recalibrating and rebalancing, you know, those relationships. They will be facing the reality of power, and in the reality of power also what is starting to surface is the reality of the economic situation. President Faye was telling on Saturday during a meeting that they are starting to see and to find out the economic situation is dire, it's more serious in terms of challenges that they expected, which is not actual for me, really not a surprise. But we are hoping that the strong signal that they sent in terms of sovereignty, that they will walk the talk, because it's also a demand from the youth. But in practical terms, what does it mean? It means that greater agency, economic agency, political agency. I think they have been very upfront on that, but let's see how they will play it out. They have announced that they will renegotiate contract. What is the feasibility of that? I'm not sure. They will need very, very strong legal teams and arguments and support in that front. They have talked about, I'm not sure whether decolonizing the political relations and getting rid of the France-Afrique. I think that also this is something that is to be expected from them to act on in a very practical manner. They will be facing resistance, but also they will be facing tricks from the former colonial power. They know how to do it, you know. But it's not only the work of one person and two. It's a work of a team. It's a work of many other actors, that is including those who used to play as the gatekeepers and the middlemen and middlewomen. So it's a very, 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 very tricky and vicious circle and system that they will need to undo. It won't be easy, even though I know that they have the intention.
The world will be watching. A lot of expectation there. We will all be watching alongside the Senegalese people. Hawamba, I would like to thank you for joining us today on Into Africa. This has been insightful for us. Thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation. And we will all be watching.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We want to have more conversations about Africa. Tell your friends. Subscribe to our podcast at Apple Podcasts. You can also read our analysis.